Good morning, everybody. This is the Wednesday, August 24th, 2022 morning session of the Portland City Council. We're now in session. Keelan, it's great to see you. Please call the roll.
Good morning. Hardesty, Maps.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Now we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the Portland City Council. City Council is holding hybrid public meetings with limited in-person attendance in addition to electronic attendance. If you wish to testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance by visiting the council agenda on the council clerk's webpage at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. You may sign up for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, and the first readings of ordinances. In-person testimony may occur from one of several locations, including City Council Chambers, the Lovejoy Room in City Hall, and the Portland Building. Written testimony may be submitted at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist, and if you are representing an organization, please identify it. For testifiers joining virtually, please unmute yourself once the council clerk calls your name. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during city council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting other testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave a meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually.
Thank you very much. As the first order of business this morning, we have a vote to add an item related to the purchase of police patrol vehicles to the agenda. Pursuant to Portland City Code 3.02.040(i)(8), I move to suspend the rules to hear an agenda item to authorize the emergency purchase of police patrol vehicles with Gresham Ford for a total not to exceed the amount of $3,680,658. This item will be taken up at the end of today's afternoon session. Can I get a second, please?
Second.
I have a second. Keelan, please call the roll.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. This item is now added to the agenda to be heard at the end of the afternoon session. Registration for public testimony is now open. Thank you, colleagues. And now we'll move back to the start of the morning communications agenda. First individual, please, Keelan, item number 702.
Request of Donna Cohen to address council regarding earthquake threat to North Portland Peninsula.
Good morning.
Thank you. I'm going to share my screen here. Okay. Thank you, council. My name is Donna Cohen. I live in St. John's. I'm here today, almost 1 year since my last visit, to again discuss the danger from the future major earthquake to the North Peninsula areas of St. John's, Cathedral Park, and Rivergate. Our supportive neighbors, some of whom you have heard from, now number almost 350 on our email list and Facebook page, and concern continues to grow as we do community outreach, informing people of this danger, which most people are not aware of otherwise. Although I heard last time from council that other areas of the city have the same concerns, I know of no other location so threatened and not already having the attention of not just the city, but the state. Specifically, I'm referring to Linton on State Route 30 and Hayden Island near the Interstate Bridge. St. John's and Cathedral Park and Rivergate affect the lives of 15 to 20,000 people who will be completely cut off from the rest of Portland. Trying to move the slide, there we go. After a major quake, due to liquefaction on three sides and the collapse of all the bridges over the 100-foot deep railroad cut on the fourth, families will be separated with no way to reunite. We have no medical facility and supplies will soon dissolve. It could be weeks, most likely months, before a secure route is developed. We can't last that long. Furthermore, if the earthquake results in toxic smoke coming from the CEI hub, we will need to leave immediately. Columbia Road is completely under the auspices of the city, and Mauricio Leclerc from PBOT has been helpful and tells us they are working to hire a contractor for engineering studies, which will include the Columbia River Bridge over the cut. We appreciate his efforts and hope the council can follow up that this is moving along as rapidly as possible. But we've been told that depending on weather conditions, Columbia Boulevard could liquefy too. The regional agency designating emergency routes wisely designated both Columbia and Lombard as emergency routes, and we need to have Lombard secured as well. Unfortunately, we have been unable to get a response from ODOT to start the discussion about rebuilding the roadway and railroad bridge there. Since the population that is at risk are Portlanders, we are asking that the city help us create a dialogue with ODOT. PBOT has been unable to help so far. We look forward to hearing about communication being arranged between us and ODOT concerning Lombard Street. Thanks very much.
Thank you. We appreciate your being here. Next individual, please, Keelan, item 703.
Request of Sabina Blizzard to address council regarding earthquake emergency route for North Portland Peninsula.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. My name is Sabina Blizzard. I too live in St. John's. Prior to that, I lived in Southeast Portland for 16 years and only recently became aware that the North Peninsula is physically divided from the rest of Portland by the railroad cut. As you are aware, we are expecting a major earthquake along the Cascadia subduction zone fault. There is approximately a 37% chance of a magnitude 7 to 9 earthquake occurring in the next 50 years. The damage will be catastrophic. Neighborhoods on the northwest side of the railroad cut are vulnerable. We are a poorer community with a median per capita income approximately 26% lower than Portland and pockets of racial minority and impoverished residents. As we know, poor and minority communities fare worse in natural disasters. We are more exposed to hazards and are less able to recover. As Donna Cohen explained, the North Peninsula is particularly vulnerable due to the number of homes and businesses on liquefiable soil and due to the CEI hub containing volatile and toxic petrochemicals, also stationed on liquefiable soil directly across the river from us. Unlike the rest of Portland, once the earthquake happens, we have no route to a hospital, no road out of town, no emergency transport vehicles coming for us, no supply or repair trucks for potentially months. This is deeply disturbing to me and many of the residents I have talked to, and it is difficult to understand why this remains unaddressed. Lombard and Columbia Boulevards have been deemed emergency routes by the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management, yet the bridges over the cut are old and will undoubtedly fail. It is therefore imperative that at minimum these two short bridges on Columbia and Lombard be seismically evaluated and rebuilt so we can access resources or evacuate the peninsula if needed. Due to our advocacy efforts, we are making some headway with PBOT, but we need your help to push this along. And so far, ODOT has ignored us regarding Lombard. I am aware that there are many competing and urgent issues in Portland today, and I urge you to please have foresight and imagine the devastating consequences that the North Peninsula and the Portland community at large will face if we fail to act. Many will suffer needlessly, and it will be considered exceedingly negligent to not have secured an emergency route for one of Portland's most vulnerable communities when we knew a major earthquake was due. Please help us. Thank you for your time.
Sabina, thank you. And I confess, I don't know a tremendous amount about this particular issue, but I agree with you. These emergency egress routes are important. I do have a question. Why do you suspect that ODOT is not being responsive to your questions?
Donna Cohen has reached out to ODOT and they have been unresponsive.
Meaning they just have not acknowledged, they haven't returned your email or they haven't returned your call?
Correct.
Okay, there's probably some ways we could be helpful there. And unfortunately, Commissioner Hardesty is not here this morning as the PBOT commissioner, but I know she will review the record and she will hear this testimony, and I appreciate your being here.
Thank you so much.
And I also just want to acknowledge the lead work that you put into this. I appreciate it when people do take the time, as you did, to not only make clear the issue, but also extra credit for the slides so we can actually see visually what you're talking about as you give your presentation. That was really helpful for me, and I just want to appreciate that. So thank you. Next individual, please, Keelan, 704, I believe. Thanks, Bobby.
Request of Caitlin Kelly to address council regarding a ban on the sale of foie gras.
Good morning, Caitlin.
Good morning. As you know, my name is Caitlin Kelly. I am a resident of Portland and a law student at Lewis and Clark, focusing my career in education on social, environmental, and ethical issues. So as a result, I'm here to join the hundreds of people who I know have been approaching you over the past year, asking you to support a proposed ordinance to ban the sale of force-fed foie gras in the city of Portland. So for a bit of background, foie gras is typically considered a luxury food. It is produced by force-feeding birds until their livers are abnormally enlarged and diseased, which is a desirable state, and is one of the most traumatic forms of animal cruelty in industrial agriculture. There are countless undercover investigations which have documented the systemic violence against birds in these massive factory farms. And considering the fact that all animals are considered sentient beings capable of experiencing pain, stress, and fear under Oregon law, the humane treatment of animals is clearly of a particular concern to Oregonians and Portlandians. Further, as all of you might know, factory farms are a leading contributor to the environmental and climate crisis in many ways. These ways range from land use change due to the many times more acres of food required to feed animals who are later fed to people compared to if we just focused on feeding people directly, ocean eutrophication through farm runoff and excessive amounts of fecal waste from these facilities that have thousands of birds, biodiversity loss, which is a marker of the sixth mass extinction that we're currently in, and more. Permitting the sale of an inherently abusive luxury item at the expense of our environment and the well-being of future generations, in my opinion, goes against the sustainable, compassionate, and long-term oriented ethos of Portland. And trust me, I understand Portland has many issues to address, such as the earthquake. And as a resident, obviously, I care about all of these issues as well. However, I do think that addressing the cruelty and unsustainability of a single item is well within all of our capacity to just consider alongside our other issues. And even more, as I stated before, with the environmental impacts and the like, it has an intersectional impact on these other issues on the greater scale. I'm proud of how Portland doesn't favor the voices of business owners or a couple wealthy individuals over the voices of its people. And I know you've been getting approached a lot over the past year on this issue. So I'm asking you to please listen to us and help us work towards a compassionate future that we all want and can all be proud of. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your being here. Next individual, please. Item 705.
Request of Chris Braidwood Reed to address council regarding policies that affect Hillsdale businesses.
Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. My name is Chris Braidwood Reed. My family owns commercial property in Hillsdale. I'm here today representing the Hillsdale Business and Professional Association. The Rose Lane project design may be successful in other areas in Portland, namely roads that have more than two lanes in a single direction and have a short grid base. Capital Highway through Hillsdale has neither. Our major concern is access disruption and confusion caused by the bus only lane, which discourages entry to the shopping center parking lot on the south side. There are over 90 businesses in Hillsdale. 19 are on this, over 19 businesses are on the south side. The design also increases the difficulty exiting the parking lot, creating increased congestion in the parking lot itself. These impediments are certain to result in a loss of Hillsdale business revenue and will have tax consequences. Any transit time saved will be more than offset by the backup traffic leading into Hillsdale. Enough backup traffic for PDOT to predict an estimated 320 vehicles diverting from Hillsdale during peak hours of the business day. Loss of Hillsdale revenue seems to be inevitable. Astonishingly, a recent PDOT draft monitoring and mitigation memo listing key community key concerns failed to acknowledge this hobbling loss of business revenue. The memo assures that PBOT will use collecting system performance information and will report in future years. but the impact of these changes will be immediate. We cannot wait for assessments in the vague future. HBPA emailed Commissioner Hardesty July 27th and several times since, asking for details regarding mitigation tools PBOT has mentioned and what the process is to access those tools. We still have not received a reply. We invite you each to drive through Hillsdale on Capitol Highway this week to compare the present configuration to the proposals, preferably during evening peak hours, which is the main reason for the Capitol Highway project. You will see how the Rose Lane design with their lane closure will create problems that do not presently exist. We have over 900 signatures that support our request to delay the project for all the reasons you read about and can witness for yourself. If this project is not delayed, we urge you before the end of the year to revisit Hillsdale to witness the impact of the Rose Lane project on commuters, businesses, the residential neighborhoods and transit users. Then let's compare notes. We will encourage the media to do the same. An assessment simply cannot wait for future years. Minimally delaying the project is the right thing to do. It's simply not needed. Worse, it'll cause a whole host of problems in the making. Blame will rest on the city and frankly you. You each have a packet in front of you with the 900 signatures. And do you have any questions?
I do, actually. So first of all, thank you for your presentation. Everybody's incredibly on time today, which is great. I appreciate that. And I know Commissioner Hardesty's staff is present today. They are listening to this. And so I'm hoping that will precipitate some back and forth. As this project has unfolded, has there been active participation from the business community, which you represent, some of the retailers in the mall? Have you had an opportunity to participate in the development of this project?
We participate in the point of listening to a completed project. We have not been able to. They told us 2 years ago, initially it was going to be a test project. Would we accept a pilot? Then this last May, they came to us and wanted to meet with the Hillsdale Neighborhood Association and the Business Association the month following, basically to present a completed project. We gave our feedback. They asked questions. There was major concerns, said, does this make any difference? And the reply was, really, the gentleman couldn't say anything. He couldn't say it would make a difference, and it hasn't.
Okay, very good. And my second question is this, is your primary concern, and I think I heard two major concerns, and I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Okay.
You know more about this than I do. It during rush hour, is it the lane being occupied, the Rose Lane, or it seemed to be, you started off by saying it was confusion about how to enter or exit the shopping mall, which suggests to me maybe some signage issues, or is it the occupation of the other lane, or is it both?
It's both. It's consolidating two lanes of traffic into one that increases the congestion. The right lane, being bus only in huge font, does not make it very inviting for a car to go over into to enter into the parking lot.
And so your suspicion is that people are not going into the parking lot because they're afraid that they're not allowed to cross that lane. Is that?
It's not welcoming. It doesn't feel good.
Okay. So yeah. Maybe there's a way to work with you and troubleshoot that as well. Good. Thank you. Colleagues, any further questions? Commissioner Ryan.
Thanks for being here. Did you say that we're not measuring the impact on businesses, or we are in the pilot?
PBOT's not.
We're not.
No, we are trying to present that. We have expressed our concern about loss of revenue.
Okay.
And just like in the mitigation, they are not recognizing that. They won't say it. We met with somebody yesterday, would not say that.
Thanks for that.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
And last but not least, next individual, item 706, please.
Request of Rick Seifert to address council regarding Bureau of Transportation proposed Rose Lane project in Hillsdale community.
Rick, long time no see. Good morning. Maybe a longer time no see. Rick, are you out there? Are you muted? Is he on, Keelan?
Yeah, it looks like
muted.
Rick, are you able to unmute?
There.
Here I am. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Hey, Rick, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good.
I have prepared some remarks. I'm a 30-year resident of Hillsdale. I moved here when Hillsdale wasn't Hillsdale. It was actually two other neighborhoods. And through the founding of the Southwest Community Connection newspaper, originally the Hillsdale Connection, I helped, along with many others, make Hillsdale a neighborhood, and you know it well, as do other people in the city. I understand, Mayor, that you get it from what Chris has had to say, and so I'm going to alter my testimony and not repeat what she has already said. Yes, there are two main problems that we have. We have the problem of traffic diversion into the neighborhood from being a backup that will undoubtedly be caused by this reduction of lanes. And so all the neighborhood streets, well, not all of them, but many of them will experience high traffic volumes in areas where PBOT actually wants to reduce traffic. So it's counterproductive as far as they're concerned. I also wanted to point out that PBOT is using pre-pandemic statistics to justify this project. And they think that we will return to our old self in a couple of years. But that is clearly absurd. Telecommuting that I'm doing right now, for instance, and the disruption of downtown Portland have already altered the commuting landscape. We don't really know where we're going to be. In fact, recently at a town hall meeting with TriMet, a representative from TriMet told us about the Forward Together plan that is still in the works, and frankly said they're trying to figure things out still. So why are we bringing in a project like this when we haven't figured things out? We don't know where we're going to be. We're planning into the unknown. As Chris pointed out, we're going to have when this goes in, and it's going to go in very soon, we're going to threaten several businesses in the town, in the shopping center, and also all the other businesses that are associated with them. And there are some 90 businesses in Hillsdale, all of which leads to an obvious question. What exactly is the problem here? What is the problem for which the Hillsdale Rose Lane project is the solution? If anything, the project addresses an imaginary problem in Hillsdale. And worse, as noted, Hillsdale Rose Lane will create very real problems where we have none. We urge you, commissioners, to hit the brakes on this ill-conceived runaway project.
Thanks, Rick. We appreciate your testimony. And as I indicated earlier, PBOT Commissioner Hardesty's staff is here, and they are hearing this testimony. Thanks for being here. That completes communications. Have any items been pulled off of the consent agenda?
No.
Please call the roll.
Max.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The consent agenda is adopted. The first time certain item, please, 707.
Amend the comprehensive plan map and zoning map for properties at 5505 to 5525 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue and the northeast corner of Southeast Ellis Street and Southeast Milwaukee at the request of Rene France, Radler, White, Parks, and Alexander, LLP, LU21-094203-CPZC.
Colleagues, this is a continuation of a quasi-judicial hearing considering the recommendation of the hearings officer on whether to amend the comprehensive plan and zoning map for a few properties located on Southeast Milwaukee Avenue. As a reminder, council initially heard this item on June 1st and heard testimony from the applicant, representatives, and members of the public at that time. Council then closed the record and continued the hearing until June 16th. During the June 16th hearing, council voted to tentatively approve the amendments subject to a few additional conditions. Council's back today to vote on the amended findings and the ordinance to reflect the council's tentative decision. Do the council members have any other matters that need to be discussed before we begin the hearing? Commissioner Rubio.
Mayor, I want to state that I was absent during the last hearing on this matter, but have reviewed the record and am prepared to vote.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. Anybody else? Commissioner Mapps.
Mr. Mayor, just a process question. After we vote on these amendments today, I believe this item will come back to council for a final vote. Is correct. That correct? Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Very good. So the proposed amended findings were posted with the agenda. Is there a motion to amend the findings as proposed?
Yes, so moved.
Commissioner Ryan moves. Is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner Rubio seconds. Please call the roll.
Mapps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The motion passes. Because this is a non-emergency ordinance, as Commissioner Mapps just indicated, the ordinance passes to second reading next week when the council will take a final vote. Keelan, can you please identify a time certain for next week when we can take the vote?
We're holding August 31st at 10:15 a.m.
August 31st at 10:15 a.m. time certain. That concludes this matter for today. Next item, please, 709. Sorry, 708.
708, thank you. Adopt the Climate Emergency Work Plan 2022 to 2025 as Portland's Climate Action Plan.
Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you, Mayor. Today, we are adopting the city's latest and updated Climate Action Plan, a clear list of action items and responsible parties to do all we can as fast as we can to reduce our carbon emissions and to be more resilient as we experience the effects of climate change. I want to again give my deep appreciation to our activists, dedicated city staff, and hundreds of community members who have testified, emailed, called, and mailed in their ideas, concerns, and feedback. This plan represents broad collaboration across 11 bureaus and offices and the input of dozens of city staff. And I want to thank Director Oliveira, Andrea Jacob, and BPS for their leadership, and as well as all the city employees who participated in building this plan. I also want to acknowledge today the thoughtful and detailed letter that my colleagues and I received from our Urban Forestry Commission, and particularly respect the expertise and outlined areas of focus that they've lifted up as essential. And we will be gathering more insight from Dr. Shondas and the commissioners in relation to the expanded work of urban forestry in the coming months. We all need to do more to double down on our tree canopy, and I am committed to seeing this through on a major multi-year, multi-million investment from the Portland Clean Energy Fund to achieve that. And as we heard several weeks ago in these chambers, the city's climate work does not reside in one bureau. We have a lot of work to do ahead, and it takes real substantive action from all of us to make the consequential changes that we need for Portland and for our families and for future generations. So it's clear that we have, it's a clear, concise snapshot of where we're making progress, where our next work is, and where City Council has the agency and authority to act. And these solutions will involve all of us. So here to give a little more detail is Director Donnie Oliveros. So I will turn it over to Donnie.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. Good morning, Council. Donnie Oliveira for the record, Director of Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. So after our July 20th presentation and hearing, we kept the record open another month to allow for written testimony to be submitted. I want to first thank everybody who took the time to submit that testimony. I read through every piece, and I really appreciated the thoughtfulness and clearly the attention to detail investment that went into providing the comments. I want to take a quick moment to provide you all with some of the themes of that testimony and some of the next steps on how we're going to implement and consider that feedback we received. First, I want to acknowledge that we agree with our Portland communities. We're in a climate emergency. We must take action not only to reduce our emissions, but also prepare for the impacts of the emergency that's upon us today. We need solutions that are going to address our preparedness, our community's resiliency, but also investments in long-term approaches. And again, we mentioned this in July, but the low-hanging fruit is gone. The next policy decisions and initiatives we take as a city are not going to be easy. We heard very loudly and clearly that more investments are needed from the city and our regional partners, and we look forward to working with you on addressing that. Second, we received a lot of great feedback for the implementation of the actions listed, and we also collected several new ideas, more than several, for items that weren't captured in the 43 actions that we listed in the Climate Emergency Declaration Work Plan. Just as a reminder for everybody, the work plan that we listed were the 43 actions that we know of today, a compilation of agreements, commitments that we've made as a city to advance over the next 3 years. We acknowledge that there is a host of other initiatives that the city can partner with, whether it be state, regional or national governments, obviously with our business community and our nonprofit community to advance. But those 43 actions really encapsulate what we know today are critical actions that we're already engaged on. And we're gonna require a lot more investment for each of those actions. So we wanna be very clear that while we heard loud and clear that there are specifics that are missing, it would have been premature for us to lay out some of those specifics. Because each action requires and deserves a really thorough process to include stakeholders, the appropriate allocation of resources, the long-term investments I alluded to in terms of capital, and frankly, making sure we have all the people at the table to make the highest and best informed decisions. So again, we want to caution folks from saying that we didn't do enough work. In fact, we feel like the work's just begun in terms of implementation. So thank you. And then last, I want to be really committed to the fact that there is a significant community engagement piece that kicks off this year. We have two very important processes that we're going to continue to advance, not just how we do engagement around climate, but really the policy development of climate action for the city of Portland, including accountability and developing like really measurable tactics. So first, the city is partnering with Multnomah County and community leadership to develop the next iteration of climate action planning. We alluded to this in July, but we think there's a higher and better model for how we do climate action planning going forward. We kind of built on that in our 2015 plan. We think we learned a lot through the Clean Energy Fund process. We have a couple of samples working with Parks and PBOT and our own Bureau of Planning work, like Build Shift, to see a new model forming for how we do co-creation with community and the business community as well. So we're excited to bring that to an actual climate action planning model this year. And then second, as announced last month and really formally in April, we're going to be kicking off a working group this fall that will establish a new commission on climate and sustainability. And we look forward to working with you all, your offices, our partner bureaus, and the community at large about what that looks like. The important thing here is that climate is very much a priority of our community. We heard it loud and clear, both in this testimony, we've been hearing it through the Charter Commission, and we want to make sure that we're creating a governance model that people feel like they can engage with and is guiding the city at large, because it's not just one bureau doing this, it's all of our bureaus and offices. So those are two really significant processes that are kicking off in 2022-23 that will really shape how we do climate business in Portland.
Does that complete your presentation?
That's my presentation.
Thanks, Mayor. Thank you, Director. Colleagues, any questions? I have a couple.
Yeah.
First of all, thanks for your hard work on this. Commissioner Rubio, I particularly want to thank you. I know you slowed this down and took the time over the course of the last month to engage many more people in this process. As I go out and I talk to people about climate, there are a couple of themes that emerge, and I'm just curious how this will dovetail with those themes. The first is that the baseline is changing, and it's changing quickly. So the science we were using 5 years ago to determine what our climate action strategies should be is more or less obsolete today. And we keep finding new information. The way this ultimately drips down to us here is we have now had two once in 100-year heat dome events in 2 years. And now, so we've moved away from thinking of these as extraordinary circumstances, and we are now standing up an entire ongoing operation focused on heat emergencies as well as cold emergencies and putting the infrastructure in place. I get asked periodically, what data are you using to determine what steps you are going to be taking? When we take a vote up here, what data are we relying on? What's the data set? What's the baseline? Can we clarify somewhere on a website what data we look at? And it doesn't have to be 25 pages, but I think it is useful for people to know what our point of reference is. That's just sort of thing number one. Are we doing that, or could we do that?
Oh, sorry, Mayor, so to answer your question, we do have on our website today, there was a really brief URL link in the report that actually captures the pathways tool and the data we use to analyze to come up with this 43 actions.
Yeah, to be clear, everybody's busy. I hate
totally
when I go to a website, it just refers me to a URL with a massive data dump. I don't have time for that. I suspect most people. Is there some way we could, you know, we could outline the 5 or the 10 key metrics that we are looking at, and then have the URL that says, if you really want to go deep, here's where you go deep.
Yeah. So it, within the work plan, we produced a sort of a visual, an infographic that showed these are the sectors, and this is the dramatic emissions reductions we need to achieve in the next 8 years, and then 30 years to do that. The to your point about the 5-year change in the science, the impacts of climate are happening in ways that we couldn't have foreseen, or maybe we foresaw out being 30 years. But the truth is, the emissions reduction strategies that we know that we need to do today, we knew 7 years ago, even 20 years ago, that we have to eliminate the combustion of fossil fuels from our systems.
And thank you for that. And you've heard my concerns. It's a really complex issue. Number two, how do people quickly understand what we are doing and what our ongoing results are? Is there something that we are planning to do that would benchmark that, or give us a dashboard, or do something where people could, who, I mean, this room is full today. This is the fullest the room's been in a while, by the way. Thank you all for being here in person. It's awesome to see people here in City Hall. So people have a real interest. Is there some way that we could make this easy for people to see what we're doing, where we are? And then that, by the way, helps all of those in the community who are very invested in this determine where the gaps are, which then helps us. They'll say, well, I see you're doing this and this and this, but you're not doing this.
Yeah.
And here's some ideas that could fill that gap.
We do produce a regular report on our emissions for the city. So this captures not just the city of Portland, but Multnomah County, because we partner with them on collecting that data. It is very wonky. So to your question, can we do a better job at communicating what the city's doing and what actions the city's taken and the resulting impacts on our emissions, for better and for worse? Yes, we can absolutely do a better job at that.
I've learned over the years that wonky's great if I'm talking to my friends, and it sucks if I'm trying to have people understand what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
So it's really important that we try to reflect this clearly, concisely, and over time be consistent in the reporting of that data. And that would help me too, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd Mayor, be great. Terrific. I think that's it for my questions. Colleagues, any other questions?
Yeah, Commissioner Rubio? I just wanted to briefly also respond to your question about more information out in the public about our progress. That's why we're excited, and Donnie mentioned this in his opening comments, about the public table that we are now beginning to envision for climate action. And that we acknowledge that we're in a time where everybody is concerned. We need to have more timely, regular, and updated dialogues and public discussions about climate action that we're taking. We have not had that capacity here at the city before, and it's a long time coming. And so we're very excited about this new step that we're taking. And Donnie, I don't know if there's anything you want to share about that, just to kind of give a little more context to what we're trying to do.
Yeah, so thanks, Commissioner. So so two things. One is, we have a Planning and Sustainability Commission that has been tasked with doing really two profoundly impossible scopes of work, which is tackling our land use and code, and simultaneously trying to provide guidance and oversight on the climate and sustainability work that the city's taking on, right? At inception idea, that made a lot of sense, but now in 2022, we need more capacity in that space. Land use is as important as ever in terms of how we're shaping our urban form, and obviously the climate emergency requires attention as well. So as we develop this process, we're evaluating not just what should that body do, but how does it interact with all the other existing advisory groups, not just in the city, the PSEF committee, but also the county, the metro. There's a lot of opportunities for collaboration, because frankly, climate change knows borders. It knows no government structure. It just impacts, right? So there's a chance there. But as a part of that, it's not just creating a body that's another bureaucratic structure. It's how does that interact with the community and get feedback on that? So I think there's a real opportunity there. Mayor, I did want to acknowledge that we do actually have a dashboard. To your point, we have to be better at pushing that information out about climate that shows a snapshot of our emissions up to 2020 in really shiny, you know, photos and infographics, so we can share that more publicly and do a better job.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking at a programmatic level. If there's some way for us to understand at a programmatic level what is working, what is not working, and
Yeah,
we have limited resources. We're obviously lucky with the Clean Energy Fund.
Yeah.
We're fortunate to have that resource available, but I want to make sure that our dollars are actually going towards programs that show results.
Yes, I agree.
Although the overall is obviously, that's the big game, right? So I appreciate that, Director.
Definitely.
Very good. Any further questions? Seeing none, Keelan, please call the roll.
Maps.
Let me start out by thanking Commissioner Rubio for bringing this important item forward. I also want to acknowledge the director and PPS for their really great work on this project. And I want to acknowledge and thank the public, both in the room and folks who submitted testimony online, for participating in this conversation. And of course, as I'm sure everyone in this room knows, this item could not be more timely. Climate change is no longer a distant danger. Instead, climate change is with us today. Now, we all remember that a little more than a year ago, Portland was sweltering under a heat dome, which saw temperatures rise to 117 degrees here in the City of Roses. And last summer, we also saw 72 of our friends and neighbors die from heat-related stress. Now, this summer, it was Western Europe's turn. Recently, we saw temperatures in London reach 104 degrees. That's the highest ever recorded. In Paris, we also saw temperatures reach 104 degrees, another record there. This summer in Europe, we saw tens of thousands of climate refugees spread across Western Europe fleeing fires. And as we know, the United States is not immune to the ill effects of climate change. As the mayor just mentioned, we have had two once in a century climate events happen in the last 2 years. And for much of this summer, we've had about 100 million people in these United States under excessive heat warnings and advisories. This is an urgent problem which must be addressed, and we must be ambitious as we embrace this work. And I want to congratulate the director and Commissioner Rubio because the work plan before us today is ambitious. This work plan is designed to reduce carbon emissions in Portland by roughly half in the next 8 years. That's a lot of progress in a very short period of time. Still, even after accomplishing these goals, there will be much work to be done. I look forward to working with this council, the private sector, and the people of Portland to get this work done. For these reasons and more, I vote aye.
Rubio.
I want to again thank Director Oliveros for joining us today, as well as my colleagues for their feedback and engagement along the way. I'm also eager for the next stage where we will kick off an unprecedented focused engagement around our climate action as a city. I'm also excited for our new visioning for a new climate action public table and what that will mean for our city. It's been a long time coming, and also those solutions will involve all of us. And yet we know that the impacts of climate crisis are not felt equitably. And this is why this work will continue to center racial, social, and economic justice, to shift power to designing solutions to communities who have not historically been at the decision-making table. So thank you to all who have shaped this plan, and thank you in advance to all those who will continue to assist in seeing this work through and getting us closer to our climate goals. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, last month after the council heard the staff presentation and testimony on this item, I was really impressed by the fact that this plan was inclusive of many interests, including those of you in the room here today. It's great to see you. It's great to have your expressions right in front of our eyes right now. I'm sure we're getting pictures of that. And also our local businesses. The fact is we need collective solutions in partnership with the city. It'll take all of us with all hands on deck working together to build solutions to our climate crisis. The outcome is a shared work plan that contains, as Director Oliveira said, 43 of the most critical carbon reduction and resiliency actions we as the city and community must complete to achieve the 2030 goal of reducing carbon emissions by 50% from 1990 levels. Thank you to all 10 bureaus. It's so fun to say all 10 bureaus. We all know that that's the way things get done at City Hall, is when you take the time to bring everyone together. Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. That pause button. I won't list all of them, but that's a big deal. And I love seeing the PUOs working together for the greater good, and I appreciate your work. I was also moved by the incredible work of our youth. Your advocacy inspires this work. It is your future. Thank you, and please don't stop advocating. I don't think you will, for our planet and for your health and safety. I know that many Portlanders will see this plan as not enough, and I want you to know that I hear you. Addressing our climate emergency requires interjurisdictional coordination. And as you are aware, it's an incredibly challenging effort to get our region, our county, and our entire globe on the same page. I'm heartened by the climate benefits of the Inflation Reduction Act, and I did want to take a moment to thank Senators Wyden and Merkley for their leadership on the federal compromise. And that's exactly what this is, a compromise. And a compromise is what my colleagues and I are voting on today. We have to take steps, and we can move forward on, and taking this step will benefit all Portlanders. It is action. And last but not least, I do want to thank you, Commissioner Rubio and Director Donnie Oliveira, your leadership on this body of work, and to your colleague, Andrea Jacobs, and all of her team, and all the work that went into this. I look forward to supporting the implementation of these actions. I really do look forward to the evolution of the communication dialogue that allows us to see a digestible data. It's like what I like to call dashboards. Anyway, I'm excited to vote aye.
Wheeler.
Well, first of all, I'd like to add my thanks, Commissioner Rubio. You've done a great job of leading this effort. And Director Oliveira, thank you. You've put a tremendous amount of energy and passion into this, and it shows. And I appreciate it. I think the product today is even better than the product a month ago. So thank you for taking the time to really hear the community. Speaking of which, we have quite a few people from the community in the room today, and you can't see it on TV, so I'm going to read some of the things that it says. Effective annual climate action to reduce emissions. You're not holding it up, but I liked the how, not what sign that you were holding up earlier. That's a question I ask myself quite often. It's easy sometimes to see what the problem is and say where you want to go. The hard part is, how are you going to get there? What specific steps are you going to take? Which gets to this gentleman's large sign over here that you can't miss, deeds, not words, which is another way of asking how, not what. And I believe, Commissioner, that this plan that you and your team and the bureaus have put forward responds to the how and not just the what. And Director, I also want to just acknowledge something you said about this being something of a framework, and there needs to be more specifics added to it, more meat on the bones, if you will, and I agree with that. And there was an earlier item that we discussed today where somebody said community feedback isn't presenting a finished plan and saying, what do you think? It's asking the community for their expertise and their information. And having the community be able to have good options to put their shoulder to the wheel to help us figure out what the how is, not just the what. And I know you respect that and appreciate that, but it's just interesting. It came up earlier in a different context. I'd also like to thank BBS staff, Andrea Jacob, for her tremendous work leading some of the community efforts on this. I believe, colleagues, that this does advance the council's 2020 emergency declaration, which, by the way, we also slowed down in order to get community feedback. And I think at the end of the day, sort of the broad consensus is we're doing a lot, not enough. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the stance we should take here and with all of our actions. As the data continues to get worse around the state of our climate, none of us are doing enough. And we always have to have that pressure right behind us, looking over our shoulder and reminding us of that, and the public undoubtedly will. There are dozens of items on this list encompassed in this resolution. It represents a broad swath of policy concepts and other climate strategies and actions that do fall within the city's purview. And this was something that was really important to me, that we actually identify the how, the steps that the city can do that are within our responsibility and within our control to be able to do. And I believe this reflects this. Obviously, many are large lifts. They'll require significant stakeholder involvement and input, not just in the near term, but over the years to come. And the bottom line is I feel that adopting the strategy today is an important step along the path. And I want to thank everybody who worked so hard on this, including everybody in this room. Thank you all for being here today, and thanks for your active leadership on this. I vote aye, the resolution is adopted. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner.
Commissioner Mapps. Absolutely. In fact, we need to, because we're ahead of schedule and we can't move on to the next item. So we will recess until it's 10:22. Why don't we just say 10:30 to make it easy?
Okay, thank you.
Great. We're in recess. All right, we are back in session. Please read item number 709, an emergency ordinance, time certain.
Authorize the city attorney to enter a consent decree in U.S. federal court to settle natural resource damage claims and pay settlement process costs.
Colleagues, we've hit a milestone in the Portland Harbor Superfund site cleanup project. The city's poised to enter a settlement in the federal court with five tribal nations, and the federal and state agencies that oversee fish and wildlife. As will be described in the presentation, this is the culmination of nearly a decade of hard work with these natural resource trustees. It's a settlement that moves Portland Harbor forward in repairing the damages of the past and starts to move us forward in healing the river. With that, I'd like to turn this over to Commissioner Mapps, the commissioner in charge of the Bureau of Environmental Services, to say a few words of introduction. Commissioner Mapps.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I am proud of the way that the city has been an early leader in working with trustees to identify the natural resources that have been impacted by contamination in Portland Harbor. That leadership has helped establish the Alder Creek Habitat Restoration Site. That leadership has helped fund the trustees' work to identify and quantify damages. And today, that leadership has brought us to a settlement with the trustees. Now we have Nancy Klinger with the city's attorney's office here to provide an overview of this work. Is Nancy here?
I believe Nancy is en route, so she's not quite here yet, is what I heard.
Why don't we continue this item for a few minutes until Nancy shows up.
Great.
And we will move to the regular agenda, please. The first item on the regular agenda is item number 719.
Accept bid of Landis and Landis Construction LLC for the Stark and Buckman East Reconstruction and Green Streets project for $25,873,710.
Colleagues, this is the report. The Stark and Buckman East Reconstruction and Green Streets project is part of the Bureau of Environmental Services Maintenance and Rehabilitation Sewer Program and the Neighborhood to the River Program. This report authorizes construction of combination sewer and street improvements, including water quality facility basins, hydrant work, and water service from Southeast 14th Avenue to Southeast 32nd Avenue and between Southeast Hawthorne Street and Northeast Everett Street. Chief Procurement Officer Biko Taylor is here to walk us through the report. Welcome, Biko. That's your cue when I say, welcome, Biko.
I think he's frozen, Mr. Mayor.
We can't hear you. We can't hear you.
Oh, yes.
Now we can hear
now
you.
Now we can hear you.
Yeah. Thank you, Biko. Morning.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler. Good morning, City Council. I'm Biko Taylor, Chief Procurement Officer. On February 3rd, 2022, City Council approved Ordinance 190-286 to complete the Stark Buckman East Construction Project as well as the Green Street Project. The Bureau estimated cost for this project was $23,837,000. On April 13th, 2022, Procurement Services issued an invitation to bid, and the due date for that invitation to bid was June 7th, 2022. In total, we received three bids. Landis and Landis Construction was the low bidder and is the recommended awardee. Their proposal totaled at $25,873,710, which is 8.5% above the estimated cost. The city's standard 20% aspirational goal did apply to this project, and I'll give a brief breakdown of the utilization on Landis and Landis subcontract plan. 21% of this contract will go to certified COBIT subcontractors, with 13% of those COBIT subcontractors being minorities. That will conclude my presentation. If there are any questions about the procurement process, I'm happy to answer them now.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions? Commissioner Mapps, did you have a question?
No.
Very good. Any public testimony on this report?
No one.
I'll entertain a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Commissioner Mapps moves. Can I get a second?
Second.
Commissioner, I'll give it to Commissioner Rubio just because she's sitting closer and sound travels a little faster the shorter distance. Commissioner Rubio seconds. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Mapps.
I want to thank Procurement and Director Taylor for their help with this project. Obviously, this particular project comes out of BES. It'll make a big improvement to the neighborhood. I'm glad to see it move forward, and I want to thank everyone who helped get us here. I vote aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Report's accepted. Is Nancy online yet? Very good. We'll move to 720, please, on the regular agenda. This is a report.
Accept bid of ORR Inc. for the Sullivan Pump Station Safety Improvements Project for $1,464,697.
Colleagues, the Bureau of Environmental Services is seeking to implement safety improvements at the Sullivan Pump Station. The safety improvements authorized by this report include constructing and enlarging platforms, building a permanent ladder, which raises the question of, are they using a rope ladder now? Installing guardrails and relocating light fixtures, all of which will allow for better access to mechanical units requiring routine maintenance. Vigo Taylor is still with us here to describe this report.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. On May 2nd, 2022, Procurement Services issued an invitation to bid on this project, with a due date of June 16th, 2022. We only received one bid on this project. I'd also like to note that the bid came in at $1.464 million, which was considerably above the Bureau's estimate. The bids came in high because the contractor will be required to ensure that the pump station is always available to operations and maintenance staff during the construction period. The contractor's bid reflects these difficulties and the increased pricing and availability of materials due to global supply chain challenges as a result of COVID-19, as well as challenges with hiring and the retention of construction trades to perform this difficult work. The city's 20% standard aspirational goal did apply to the solicitation, and we did not do well with minority contractors. 98% of this contract will be performed by ORR Incorporated, with only 1.77% going to COBIT subcontractors. I would like to note that ORR Incorporated is a Native American firm and is a state COBIT certified contractor. With that, if you have any other questions about the procurement process, I'm happy to answer those questions at this time.
Commissioner Mapps.
Director Taylor, do you know why the contractor we're going with here is not COBIT certified, despite the fact that they are a Native American-owned firm?
Based on my notes here, this contractor is certified, Commissioner Mapps. ORR is a Native American-owned firm and is an ESB state COBIT certified contractor.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
I had a couple of questions. Number one, In your reasons for why this, first of all, how much did this exceed your original estimate by? What was 41%. Oh my gosh. Okay. And one of the reasons you gave, Director Taylor, was that the plant has to remain operational during the construction period. And so when you say it exceeded your estimate because the plant had to remain operational during the construction period, are you implying that we didn't know that when we generated our original estimate?
Yes, that's what I'm implying. And also there are going to be labor costs incurred by the contractor as a result of making the pump station available to operations and maintenance staff during the construction period. So there are operational costs associated with building, executing the project, and keeping the pump station available to key personnel that were not calculated in the original engineer's estimate.
All right. Well, one thing I've always liked about you and respected about you is you don't pivot. You're very direct in your answers, and I appreciate that. Last but not least, I assume that, but I want to ask anyway, given that there are supply chain issues, there are labor issues, all of the costs of our any capital construction project right now are going to be accelerated. I assume that we are reevaluating the time frame by which we do certain capital construction projects. If they can be held off, I assume we're holding off. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement. And I would like to add that, you know, based on our model, our contracting model, we put quite a bit of risk on the general contractors to complete these projects. Their schedules reflect any supply chain shortages that they may face. So it's their responsibility to procure and source the materials necessary on our projects. So baked into the RFP, baked into the proposals, we typically see in the bureaus and the engineers, they typically see how those supply chain challenges affect the schedule.
Okay, thanks, Director Taylor. Any other questions? Commissioner Ryan has a question.
Oh, hello, Director Taylor. I have a follow-up to Commissioner Mapp's question. I didn't track it. So I hear that it's a Native American firm, and yet the COVID numbers are 1.77, correct, percent? And it just follows a big ticket item, which, of course, was quite celebrated for such high COVID numbers. So I just got confused on there must be some obstacles I'd just like to hear about directly.
Well, as the prime contractor, you know, they're based on our policy, we're not necessarily able to acknowledge the prime contractor towards our goal, right? So our subcontract goal, our 20% aspirational subcontract goal applies to the partners that they will hire to help them complete the project. It does not include the fact that they are a Native American firm. So your question is very pertinent and timely, and you passed some measures along with your colleagues and council to allow us to change that back in April. So we are working on measures that would allow us to acknowledge the work of prime contractors that do identify as disadvantaged businesses in the future.
Thank you, that was helpful. So the ARP goal is specifically about subcontractors.
Correct. That's the aspirational goal set forth in the solicitation. It's specifically around those subcontractors.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Commissioner Rubio.
Yeah, sorry. I just have one quick follow-up question to Commissioner Ryan's questions. So, Bico, I'm sorry I don't know this, but so you're saying that as a city, we're not allowed to acknowledge a prime contractor if they are my own minority-owned firm or BIPOC-owned firm, is that materially meaningful in some capacity, or are we acknowledged? Can you give me a little bit more context around that so I understand?
Of course, in absent of, I don't have the ESB and some of the other policy, the nuanced policy in front of me. But there are thresholds by which we acknowledge a disadvantaged business. Once they graduate based on revenues, projects executed from being a quote unquote disadvantaged business, we do not acknowledge that they're them against a participation goal. So if they graduate from an ESB program, if you will, and become a pretty large prime contractor, clearly we've done our job to help them grow, right? Through some of the social equity initiatives that we put forward. So once they do reach a certain revenue goal, a certain size, it is our practice that we do not acknowledge those goals against our aspirational goals. So once they graduate out of a program, they meet a certain threshold, certain set of criteria for graduating, no, we do not acknowledge that towards our goals after that.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, wait, hold on, because I think I'm starting to understand this a little bit.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yeah. So it's a very good thing that that they become a primary, correct? Like that's aspirational.
That's a very good thing for us, for the city of Portland.
Right. And so I think what's confusing to all of us is the way this is presented in terms of our COVID goals. So or we wouldn't be up here asking such follow-up questions. But it really, it's not intuitive, that's for sure. And so I look forward to all of us, maybe you could help with this, Director Taylor. Have these numbers be more relevant to our aspirations? Because we want we want minority of firms to graduate, like you said, and then they become a primary. So do we have, now I'm just curious, do we have a primary goal for COBID? Like, or is it just that we hit that? It's like we just succeeded, and then it doesn't matter after that. That's kind of how it's coming across today.
Absolutely. So we're working on items again as a result of measures that were passed in council in April to allow us to acknowledge, at certain thresholds, acknowledge the presence of disadvantaged businesses that are performing as primes, right? And so because those things are not in place yet, many of those items won't be reflected in the reports that I'm giving on these specific projects today. And I acknowledge that it can be somewhat ambiguous and hard to understand, but we are working on getting us to a place where we do acknowledge businesses that may be in between thresholds towards our goals, right? So I acknowledge that we do have a ways to go, but to give you some encouragement, again, just harking back to what we did in April when council helped us pass really key initiatives for social equity, we will be making improvements on how we report and also who we acknowledge as disadvantaged in the future.
Thank you, Director Taylor.
Thank you. Is there any public testimony on this report?
No one signed up.
Very good. Please call the roll.
Maps.
I want to thank Director Taylor for that tutorial on procurement. I think we all learned a lot today. I vote aye.
Rubio.
Thank you, Director Taylor, for answering our questions and making it a little more clear for us, and look forward to seeing the impacts of all the changes that we voted on earlier this year. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Director Taylor. That was a great conversation. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I vote aye. Thank you. The report is accepted. I understand that we now do have Nancy here. We'll go back to item 709, please, and start with the presentation by Nancy Klinger. Welcome. Thank you.
And first, my apologies for any confusion. I was unaware that my time certain had changed. And so.
No problem. None of us are ever late for anything. So.
I thought it was early and suddenly I'm late. Oh my gosh. I was going to mention that. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. It's so exciting to be back in council chambers again. It just feels fantastic.
It does. Yeah. Yes. It's good to see you.
So I'm Nancy Klinger, Senior Deputy with the Office of the City Attorney. And I'm here today because the city is ready to file its natural resource damage assessment settlement with the Portland Harbor Superfund Natural Resource Trustees. This is a final step in what has been a long process. We are settling with the Natural Resource Trustees. Specifically, this is the Five Tribes,
Siletz, Nez Perce, Grand Ronde, Umatilla, and Warm Spring tribes. We're also settling with federal and state natural resource agencies, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and National Marine Fisheries. And what we're settling are the ecological damages, recreational losses, and damages to tribal resources in Portland Harbor. The remedy for these damages is restoring and constructing habitat. When you think of Superfund, I think often you think of the main part of Superfund, which is working with EPA to perform the cleanup. And the cleanup is addressing the contamination in the sediment. But there's a second part to Superfund, and it's for natural resource damages. And this is where these trustees look at how to restore what that contamination has impacted for recreation and habitat loss. When the site was first listed as a Superfund site in 2000, the trustees formed their council and started to look at how do we identify the losses, which, if you can imagine, is a rather daunting task. And the city started to fund them early on so that they had resources to do the inventory and to start to quantify the loss. We started funding back in 2003. So the trustees went on to identify the losses, quantify the value that was lost and the damages done, plan for habitat restoration, plan where that restoration would take place, how they would measure it, and how they would monitor it. And the city funded each step of those process. We also were an early funder of a habitat restoration site at the end of Sovie Island called Alder Creek, and helped get that started even before it was accredited by the trustees, so that habitat would start to be built as soon as possible. This entire process has been a public process. The documents have gone on to comment, they are on the trustees' website, and there's been responses to comment. The city is also, in 2014, was authorized by council to conduct settlement negotiations to address the city's portion of liability for that resource damages. These negotiations have led to an agreement on the amount of credit needed to satisfy the city's obligations. These have been confidential legal negotiations. The city's habitat purchases that it made, the funding that it's provided for nearly a decade, that value is counted towards our ultimate settlement. And so you'll see that the ordinance before you requests $400,000, and that is for the legal process costs to continue and finish this case in court. We pay the trustees legal fees for doing this, and that is an estimate of our share of all legal fees to the end of the process. The city is one of about 15 to 20 parties that will be on this very first consent decree that is going to federal court. The terms of all of the parties' consent decree are confidential until they are lodged in court. We expect them to be filed within a few weeks, at the most a month or so, and then all of these terms will be public. They are just confidential until they are lodged in court. This is, as I mentioned, a group of about 15 to 20 of the parties that agreed to work early with the trustees and settle early. There are a lot of other liable parties out there, and the trustees have other settlements that they will go down the road. So this is not the end of their ability to get funding for natural resource damages. And so that brings us to where we are now. The ordinance authorizes us to sign this consent decree, file it in court, and then the judge will then look at the consent decrees and will determine if they are in fact fair and reasonable. I note that the trustees, the tribes, the natural resource agencies are the ones presenting it in court and defending it in court, and also believe that this is a fair and reasonable settlement. It is not a complete settlement of liabilities, because the Yakima Nation has withdrawn from the Portland Harbor Trustee Council. They have a separate legal claim that is on a separate process. It is currently stayed in federal court. And this does not address those, but it does address the claims of the Portland Harbor Natural Resource Trustees. And so that's it in a nutshell. And if you have questions, I'd be happy to explain or clarify anything.
Thank you, Nancy. Any questions, colleagues? This is an emergency. Thank you, Nancy. Do we have any public testimony on this item?
No one's saying
it's an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thanks, Nancy. We appreciate you being here today. Back to the regular agenda. 7-2-1, please.
Authorized contract with Kodiak Pacific Construction for the OR 99 West Southwest Barber Boulevard area sidewalk infill project for $1,019,180.
So this is also an emergency ordinance as part of the OR 99 West Southwest Barber Boulevard area sidewalk infill project. This ordinance authorizes sidewalk infill in two specific areas. The north side of Southwest Custer Drive will receive a continuous sidewalk and a multi-use path for pedestrians and bicyclists will be put in along the east side of Southwest 26th. This work will bring those areas up to current ADA standards. Chief Procurement Officer Biko Taylor is here to walk us through the ordinance. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. So the engineering estimate for this project was $992,500. So an authorizing ordinance was not required. Procurement services issued an invitation to bid on June 8th, 2022, with a due date of July 7th, 2022. We received 9 bids in total. Kodiak Pacific Construction Company was the low bidder and is the recommended awardee. Their bid totaled at $1,019,180, which is 2.69% over the engineering estimate. This is a federal, I'd like to point out to council that this is a federal aid transportation project under the ODOT Federal Aid Highway Program. Under ODOT certification, this project will be reviewed and audited by ODOT for federal project aid. The project had a 10% DBE goal, which is set by ODOT, not by the city of Portland. The project has an actual participation of 10.5%, so it met the ODOT DBE goal, but that award also reflects a 10.5% subcontract plan utilized by minorities, so that is a positive step here. Kodak presented a subcontract management plan. We reviewed it, and they met the DBE goal. With that, I'll answer any questions about the procurement process.
Any further questions on this item? Do we have any public testimony?
No one signed up.
Emergency ordinance, call the roll.
Rubio, I'm sorry, Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted, 7-2-2, an emergency ordinance.
Authorize a letter of agreement between the city and local laborers 483 to pay recreation support staff employees appropriately with time and class.
Colleagues, summer hiring for recreation support staff within Portland Parks and Recreation was delayed in 2021 due to the impacts from COVID-19. Given the delay, employees were unable to meet the requirements to progress through the wage schedule. This ordinance amends the wage schedules to ensure that we're appropriately paying recreation support staff. Labor Relations Coordinator Jamal Anthony is here to present the ordinance. Hi, Jamal.
Hi, good morning, Mayor and Council. It's been a while. I don't have much on this one other than to say this is a technicality. These employees, the employees in question, they receive an annual increase based on the hours that they work in the previous summer. They weren't able to work the necessary hours last summer because there was a delay in hiring because of COVID-19. So we didn't want to hold those employees in a place of harm by keeping that increase away from them. So we just want to get them to their normal level of pay this summer and all subsequent summers where we make up for that loss of hours.
No one signed up. Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
I want to thank Jamal and his team for their work on this. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye.
Case settlement of Jacob York bodily injury lawsuit for the sum of $75,000 involving the Portland Bureau of Transportation.
Sorry, Deputy City Attorney Ryan Bailey and Senior Claims Analyst Joseph Jesse are here to present the ordinance. Welcome, Ryan and Jesse. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. This ordinance relates to a lawsuit in arising from a May 20, 2018 streetcar derailment. The lawsuit named the city as a defendant along with three manufacturing entities responsible for the design and construction of the streetcar. The city is agreeing to contribute toward a global settlement of this tort claim to facilitate more efficient resolution of the city's own claims, including but not limited to the city's claims for damages arising from the repair of the streetcar and for indemnity from the responsible manufacturers and associated insurance companies. The settlement preserves the city's claims against these entities, as well as the city's ability to seek full indemnity from the responsible parties for amounts being paid by this ordinance. This settlement contribution is expressly not an admission of liability or fault. And for those reasons, the City Attorney's Office and Risk Management is recommending adoption of this ordinance. I'd be happy to address any questions you may have.
Seeing none, is there any public testimony?
No one signed
Call
up.
Call the roll.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next item, 724, please.
Amend the Fire and Police Disability Retirement and Death Benefit Plan to expand additional cancer presumptions.
See, there's a second reading. We've already heard a presentation and taken public testimony on this item. Is there any further business? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Maps.
I just want to take a moment to thank Commissioner Hardesty for bringing this item forward. This is great public policy. I think this ordinance makes an important step towards workplace equity, which is one of the reasons why I am glad to vote aye.
Rubio.
Also want to appreciate Commissioner Hardesty's role in bringing this forward and happy to vote aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thank you. Next item, 725, please.
Authorized contract with WSP USA Inc. to provide professional engineering and design services for the Carolina Work Zones 1 and 3 Rehabilitation Project number E11004 in the amount of $4,950,303.
This is also a second reading. Any further business on this item? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next up is the four-fifths item 725-1.
Authorize a letter of agreement between the Portland Police Association and the Portland Police Bureau to allow the rehire of retired members.
Colleagues, we have a four-fifths agenda item here to correct an enrollment error in the Portland Police Bureau Retire-Rehire Program. I'll turn this over to Captain Rob Simon of the PPB to introduce this item. Welcome, Captain.
Thank you, sir. Like I stated, I appreciate and thank you for the opportunity today. I'm Captain Rob Simon of the Personnel Division. The Portland Police Bureau processed 8 members through our Retire-Rehire Program in July. 3 of those are the reason for this LOA request from council. This was a clerical error that was made in regard to regarding a change in the new PPA contract language that occurred in the Community Safety Division. They process or offer hiring letters. The error was caught by the Bureau of Human Resources when the rehires were processed. Unfortunately, that was after the hiring letters were sent and signed. And part of the timeliness and the emergency need for this one to be done so quickly is one of those members is actually already back to work. One starts in a couple of days and the other one is back next month. Currently, we're conducting gap backgrounds as required for all 3 members for their time when they were away from the city, which was a very short amount of time. And furthermore, we've taken steps to prevent this from happening in the future. We now have our human resources business partner reviews our offer letters, so I have putting them another level of review on these before they go out to ensure that this doesn't happen again.
Thanks, Captain Simon. Colleagues, any questions? Any public testimony on this item, Keelan?
We have one person signed
Very
up.
Very good.
Mark Porras.
Mark, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks, Captain, for providing that update. I didn't have that information before, but I'm just going to go through my testimony anyway. Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Mark Porras, and I use he, him pronouns. And while I am a member of Portland Cop Watch, since Council added this item less than 20 hours before this session, our group did not have time to prepare collective testimony, so I'm just testifying as an individual today. And I'm here also because I'm confused about the purpose of Section 62.4 in the city's contract with PPA. And I believe the purpose of Section 62.4, which is the retire rehire program for sworn members, is to allow officers to retire so that they can start drawing their pension and receive their sick leave payout and then immediately go back to work doing the same job for the same pay. Officers who apply for and are accepted into this program are essentially double dipping, collecting their pension while getting paid as city employees. And upon being rehired, they're also entered into the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan. And does this sound like good policy? I mean, it's obviously not good fiscal policy, but is it even good policy at all? So the letter of agreement that PPB is asking you to sign is an exception for those three officers to participate in the program. And I was wondering if you're able to confirm or if the captain can confirm that these three officers are actually already retired, because as of yesterday, all three of them were still listed in the DPSST's CJ IRIS program as still being active members of PPB. And so this, again, this may be a clerical error, but this agreement comes to you at council, not to rubber stamp its approval, but for you to actually consider what it means before voting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate your testimony. Any further discussion on this item? Please call the roll.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
I just want to appreciate the mayor's office and their staff for briefing us thoroughly yesterday on this. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Thank you, Captain Simon, for being here and explaining the situation, and I appreciate my colleagues agreeing to hear this item today. While the issue boils down to what is basically an unfortunate clerical error, the need to correct consequences of that error is urgent. Retire Rehire allows us to retain decades of experience and expertise in the police bureau at a time when our community, including police officers, face exceptional levels of violence. I want to thank the officers who've agreed to return to their duties when they might have otherwise stepped away to enjoy retirement. Your commitment in the face of daunting circumstances is honorable and appreciated more than perhaps you will ever know. I also appreciate the steps PPB has taken to prevent this from happening again. Thank you, Captain Simon, for making that commitment. I appreciate it, and I vote aye. And the 4/5 agenda ordinance is adopted. Thank you. Colleagues, that completes our business for this morning. And I just want to remind folks, we have a 4/5 agenda item on our, a suspension of the rules item on our afternoon agenda. And if people would like to testify on that matter, they can sign up to do so. With that, we are adjourned.